It's pretty hard for students to see past the end of the academic year, with COVID having frozen so many of our schools and institutions in place. Difficult to imagine what this must be like for those coming out of college. One University of Michigan senior just got an enormous boost for her future plans. Amy Tess Gerges, whose major is political science, has been selected for the next class of Rhodes Scholarships. In a normal year, that would mean a trip to the UK and extended studies at Oxford. For 2021, that plan is mostly intact. She joins us now to explain. Amy Tess Gerges, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me.
How does it feel to have been selected for such a huge scholarship?
To be honest with you, almost 2 weeks later, I'm still completely in shock. There's such a strong contrast between the work I've been doing throughout undergrad with so many people who are incredible and brilliant and yet would never get a chance to be in those rooms.
I want to give people a sense of sort of where your academic work has led you and where your brain is. Your senior thesis is about mutual aid groups during COVID-19. It's obviously super timely. What led you to focus on that?
In the political science department, we are supposed to decide what we want to write our thesis on pretty early. So I had already decided on another topic before COVID hit. And when I saw the incredible outpouring of mutual aid happening in my community and around the country, and the contrast between this work and the sort of lack of literature on that in political science and elsewhere, I just knew it was really, really important to cover how people were coping with state neglect during this time.
When you talk about mutual aid, do you mean like super micro interactions between people on a block, or do you mean maybe small grassroots community groups that just mobilized and became very active during the course of the pandemic?
You know, part of the contribution to the literature I'm hoping to make is to figure out how we want to define mutual aid in this moment. The sort of radical tradition definition of mutual aid is horizontally governed webs of community members helping one another. The catchphrase is solidarity, not charity. So essentially, one person needs something, another person needs another thing. They're working together to make it happen. It's not merely the privileged giving coats or money to the underprivileged. As far as whether it's a registered organization or not, it could really go either way. But I'm really trying to figure out in this moment what types of mutual aid groups have emerged and whether or not all of them even fit a traditional definition.
Yeah. What are some of the groups that you've had an eye on?
One of the most fantastic groups is the Mutual Aid Network of Ypsilanti. They have been around long before COVID started, and they are consistently doing the work of supporting each other in the Ypsilanti community. But I've also got a database of mutual aid groups that have been both pre-COVID or started post-COVID across the country. And they range everywhere from rural Kentucky to the middle of Brooklyn. So it's been a really interesting range of stuff.
The group that you mentioned in Ypsilanti, what are some of the kinds of things that they've started doing?
So they're primarily focused on getting things to people who need them. So whether that's money for rent, whether that's groceries, clothing, but they're also really, really focused on building community and building the power to, you know, mount to necessary political action as well. So for example, when the mayor of Ypsilanti over the summer, you know, made some racist comments, they were really big advocates in getting her to step down, and they just do what it takes to empower the Ypsilanti community.
With regards to the Rhodes Scholarship, you've said some things about how getting this honor is amazing and also involves a bit of whiplash for you personally in thinking about your place in the universe where the Rhodes Scholarship was created. Could you talk a little bit about what you mean by that?
You know, with an Iranian-Egyptian heritage, I grew up watching the countries I love encountering democratic backsliding, dealing with crippling sanctions, violence, the whole deal. And frankly, that is directly related to the legacies of colonial and Western interference. And number one on that list is the United Kingdom. And so Cecil Rhodes being the namesake and the funder of the Rhodes Trust, one of the most infamous colonizers and eugenicists in history, really wrestling with what it looks like for me to be working my entire life towards reparations and reconciliation while also entering this environment has been really, really interesting. But I'll also say that, you know, the Rhodes Trust is well aware of the legacy, and countless former and present Rhodes scholars have called them out for that. So it's definitely not like I'm saying anything new.
Are you planning to head to Oxford next October?
At the moment, yes.
Wow. What is the program? Yeah. What has the program told you about what to expect and whether the program is actually going to go forward in the way that it has in the past? I mean, do you know if you're going to be able to attend classes even?
They have absolutely no way to predict what will happen. I know that the current Rhodes class in the year above me was doing a lot of school online, you know, but still went over to the UK. So worst case scenario, we'll end up in something like that. But I'm hopeful that we can at least get halfway back to normal by next October.
Assuming that you are able to do some kind of work in person, what would you like to focus on in Oxford?
All of undergrad, I've spent a lot of time doing work outside of the classroom and frankly, not spending as much time as I would have liked doing deep dive on the theory and practice of radical social movement tradition. And so what I'm really hoping to do at Oxford is study similar topics to what I'm studying now, looking to get an MPhil, hopefully in comparative politics or sociology, and write a dissertation, hopefully, on the ways in which community organizations mount towards social movements.
What kind of different political angle do you think you might get on such things at a place like Oxford?
Yeah, it's really interesting because Oxford obviously is a college town that houses one of the most prestigious universities in the world, but it's also a 45-minute train ride from London. And also the United Kingdom as a whole is very much in a similar political moment as the United States with regards to tensions between the far right and the populist left. And so I'm really, really interested to see how things are both similar and different in the United Kingdom compared to here.
My guest today is Amy Tess Gerges. She has just been accepted for a Rhodes Scholarship and is anticipating heading to Oxford, England to study in fall of 2021. I'm so interested by the way that you sort of think about working on power structures outside of institutions while you're fueled within institutions.
Yes.
It's not, you know, it's something that a lot of people involved in academic work, you know, kind of have to think about and figure out and come to terms with. But are you at a place in your life where you do feel like the institutions we have, warts and all, still have useful things to show us, or, you know, to give us the space to figure out what we need to about society to make things work better?
Well, I am 21 years old, and I have a feeling that this is a question I'll be asking for the rest of my life. But at the moment, I tend to favor a two-pronged approach towards building power. And what I mean by that is I think anyone who claims working solely within institutions to create change hasn't taken a look at history. But at the same time, I believe in learning to speak the language of those in the halls of power in order to make change. So, you know, when you look back over the course of history, in the United States, no significant change has ever been made via incremental legal change, right? It's always been people in the streets demanding urgent action. And then that translates to a change in popular consciousness, which translates to political change. So I think we need people on the inside and the outside, and who knows where I'll land.
You know, this would be a pretty stunning achievement at any point, but man, it's so crazy that this honor came to you in a year when the world has been frozen for a lot of people. And many, many, many of us, either those involved in schools or just in their jobs, are just sort of trying to get by. What has that been like? thinking about making a radical leap while everything is at a standstill?
Like many others, this year has been one of standstill, growth, and in many ways planting seeds that I don't know whether or not they will sprout. And so to have gotten the sudden news of winning an award that I absolutely was not expecting to win, as someone who's about to graduate college and thinking that I would have to find a job or, you know, plunge into this deep void of the future, it's been really a shock to the system, but I think is emblematic of the juxtapositions that this entire year has brought me.
Do you feel like you're going to have time to get your head around this before things start moving forward?
I don't think I'll ever get my head around it, to be honest with you. I think I'm going to show up to Oxford and be like, what the hell is going on? But that's been the story of my life, so we'll figure it out.
So this year's Rhodes Scholarship class includes 22 students who are people of color. That means it's one of the most diverse groups of scholars in the program's whole history. What do you think that means for the program?
There has been a lot of talk about how this American Rhodes class has been the most diverse of any class in history. And it has been, and that's phenomenal. But I also really want to emphasize that diversity isn't enough. And I'm really, really excited. I'm already talking to the incoming scholars, and all of us are committed to doing the work to uplift the identities of the marginalized, both those that we inhabit and those that we don't. And so I just think that's a really important thing to mention when we're talking about diversity, is that the fact that I'm an Iranian Egyptian American woman is not enough. I also hope to be doing the work to represent that.
Could you say a little more about what might move the needle if it's not just the selection of a diverse range of scholars?
Yeah. Change often comes with growing pains and misunderstandings. And I think lately what we've seen in many elite institutions, both political and academic and otherwise, is a tokenizing of people of color and Black people especially, to claim that progress is being made. And that doesn't mean progress isn't being made, but it's not enough to merely pick someone for their identity. The Rhodes Trust and, frankly, American politics, which is struggling with the same issue, needs to really be focusing on having actions, whether it be policy or where the money is going, to uplift people who have those identities who are not the ones in those rooms.
Amy Tess Gerges, thank you so much for talking with us. And hang on. I'm sure the ride's going to get more interesting before it gets boring.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to do the interview.